Service. Ethics. Advocacy. Welcome to the AICPA Tax Section Podcast. The Tax Center provides guidance, information, and tax practice tools to support the three goals of the AICPA Tax Section Strategic Plan: practice support, professional standards and ethics, and Washington representation. The AICPA Tax Section Podcast is one more source of information on all things tax and tax-related. In this episode, William Stromson, Director of the AICPA Tax Division, will discuss current developments in tax law and practice.
Hello, this is Bill Stromson, a director with the AICPA Tax Team, with the Tax Section Audio Alert for April 10th, 2009. This is part of our series of bi-weekly podcasts to report tax law and tax practice developments to CPAs. These are based on emailed alerts that AICPA Tax Section members receive and that include hot links to the source materials that we'll refer to in this audio version. Please consider joining the Tax Section to take full advantage of our practice alerts. You can join online at aicpa.org/tax. It's the height of busy season, so today I'm covering only three topics that have time-sensitive compliance requirements. Those are details of the new small business NOL carryback provision, the new requirement to provide notices and to provide a supplement to former employee COBRA coverage, and an important reminder about foreign bank account reporting. Let's start with the new small business NOL carryback election. The new Tax Act allows electing small businesses with a three-year average gross receipts of $15 million or less and a current year NOL to choose a carryback period for that loss of up to 5 years. While the $15 million test is measured at the entity level, a partner, S-Corp shareholder, or individual actually make the election on his or her return and decide how many years the NOL will go back. The individual cannot, however, take an NOL if his or her share of the pass-through entity's NOL does not cause that individual to have an overall individual NOL on Form 1040. RevProc 2009-19 has the details for making the election and filing returns for taxpayers in various situations. The IRS recently issued a news release to clarify how to use the extended NOL carryback rules, including links to updated forms, instructions, and publications, and to a series of frequently asked questions and answers. This is available in the news release area of the IRS.gov website, and you should really take a close look at this if you have any particular questions for your situation. Attention needs to be paid to the timing of filing the election to use the five-year carryback rules, they're very specific. I'll give you some of them, but for the most part, you need to make the election by April 17th. There are some exceptions, though. So please take a look at the IRS news release and the RevProc and see how it applies to your particular situation. Generally, if an election had been made to waive the two-year NOL carryback, that can be revoked and a new carryback period elected, but that has to be done by April 17, 2009. Otherwise, the election date for the five-year carryback rule will depend on whether a return has or has not been filed. If a 2008 return has been filed, the election may be made still as of the later of 6 months after the due date of the return determined without extensions, or April 17, 2009. We're just a week away from that. If a 2008 return has not been filed, the deadline for making the election is the later of the due date with extensions for the year the loss occurs, or April 17, 2009. If somehow you've missed this, there may be some 9100 relief. So again, check the RevProc and the news release and see how this works. The gross receipts test is calculated in a particular way, and there's some clarification of this in the news release. To qualify as an eligible small business for the rule, the business must have $15 million or less in gross receipts determined by taking an average of the three most recent years. The gross receipts test must also consider the rules for aggregation of interest, meaning that if an individual is an owner in more than one partnership or S-corp, that the gross receipts of an entity where the individual has an ownership interest greater than 50% must be part of the three-year average calculation. This determination is made at the entity level. To obtain accelerated refund of the NOL, a sole proprietor or other non-corporate taxpayer uses Form 1045, Application for Tentative Refund. A corporation with an NOL uses Form 1139, Corporation Application for Tentative Refund. Generally, these forms must be filed within a year of the end of the year of the NOL, but cannot be filed before the return for the year has been filed. The IRS will issue these tentative refunds within 45 days. Making the carryback election. Each individual partner S-Corp shareholder may make his own election on whether to elect the five-year carryback period. Therefore, each partner or shareholder making the election must take into account the appropriate income from the entities in which he has an ownership interest, taking into account the appropriate aggregation rules. Whether to apply the losses to a tax year that begins in 2008 or ends in 2008 is a decision that must be made by the individual partner or shareholder. The amount of the carryback. Guidance issued by the IRS in RevProc 2009-19 allows the taxpayer to choose a carryback period of between 3 and 5 years under the new law. The carryback period chosen must be specified in the election. And now on to new employer requirements with respect to former employee COBRA coverage. In the last e-alert, we reported on a provision in the new Tax Act that requires employers to pay 65% of COBRA health coverage for employees who were involuntarily terminated between September 1, 2008 and December 31, 2009, and to recover this cost from the government through a credit on their quarterly payroll tax returns. We want to pass along some additional information, some of it coming from members who heard our earlier broadcast. Employers must send notices by April 18th to employees who are terminated during the period, whether voluntarily or involuntarily, and whether or not enrolled in COBRA, to inform them of this benefit, even if they were voluntarily terminated again. Substantial per-employee and per-day penalties apply for failing to do so, and the Department of Labor has provided model notices for employers to use at its website. Readers have raised several issues with us, and we're seeking some IRS guidance. Some employers have cut employees to the point where payroll taxes are insufficient to recover the required COBRA subsidy, and employers are uncertain as to how they are made whole for this congressionally mandated cost, possibly by making the credit refundable or allowing the COBRA cost to be carried forward to take credits against future payroll tax returns. Another issue is whether the general exception for small employers, those with fewer than 20 employees, still applies. Generally, the new law applies to businesses with 20 or more employees. However, 40 states extend COBRA-like benefits to companies with fewer employees, and it is unclear whether these state laws will interact with the new ARRA provisions to require similar employers to subsidize COBRA insurance. Finally, some have questioned whether employers whose benefit plans already include COBRA subsidies can base their payroll credit on the total employer subsidy or just the additional amount that comes into play with the required 65% coverage. It appears that it's just the additional amount, not the amount that the employer voluntarily had provided prior to the ARRA provision. And unfortunately, that will encourage employers to drop their voluntary subsidy. We'll keep you informed of what we hear from the IRS. And for more information on these issues, go to the AICPA Tax Section website. Foreign bank accounts. Practitioners have to ask clients about the existence of foreign bank accounts and, if appropriate, disclose the information on Schedule B, even if the client has no reportable interest or dividends and would not otherwise have to fill out Schedule B. Taxpayers who currently file forms 5471, 8858, 8865, or 3520 may also be subject to FIBAR reporting requirements. If the questions on Schedule B of 1040 are left blank, it may be considered an incomplete return and the statute of limitations could remain open. Practitioners should notify clients of FIBAR. Tax practitioners with clients with foreign bank accounts should notify clients of their responsibility to file the report of foreign bank and financial accounts, that's Treasury Form TDF-90-22.1, and that has to be filed on or before June 30th, 2009. The IRS has released a new FIBAR form, which should be used for 2008 filings and later years. Significant changes have been made to the form, so practitioners need to read the instructions carefully. Also, practitioners should check to make sure that their return preparation software is using the proper version of the FIBAR report. There's some expanded coverage of FIBAR requirements. According to the new form instructions, beginning for the 2008 tax year, the new FIBAR requirements apply to persons in and doing business in the United States. Therefore, a non-resident alien working in the U.S. as an employee or independent contractor may be subject to the new 2009 FIBAR filing requirements because that individual is in and doing business in the U.S. and has signing or other authority over foreign financial accounts. A foreign corporation which is doing business in the United States is also considered a U.S. person. Previously, non-residents did not have to file, but with this new form in 2009, persons in and doing business in the U.S. must file, whether or not they are non-residents. This means that many non-residents who do business in the U.S., Canadians for example, may have to disclose their foreign bank account information. The IRS website and this article has more information about doing business in the United States requirement. The IRS website indicates that persons who are merely visiting or sporadically conducting business in the U.S. are not in and doing business in the U.S. for FIBAR reporting purposes and provides some examples, including things like persons who are not citizens or residents and who are engaged in business but only occasionally visit the U.S. to meet with customers or business associates. Please go and see the information on our website or the instructions to the FIBAR form to make sure that your clients are in compliance. The tax division of the AICPA will continue to discuss these issues with the IRS and try and clarify the new requirements. For more information, again, go to the tax section website. That's it for this last e-alert before busy season is over. Your AICPA tax team in Washington wishes you a great finish for this busy season and hope you have a nice time after it's over. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AICPA Tax Section Podcast. Join the tax section and receive emailed alerts with links to many of the source documents referenced in this podcast. And be sure to tune in next time for even more coverage of all things tax and tax related.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA is not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA makes no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assumes no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and expressly disclaims all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.